what technology industry can do for insurance. So please welcome Mark Cohen. He's a divisional CEO of Wilbur. It's a rebranded part of Claim Central Consolidated technology part. Mark is working as a technical leader within Wilbur. Wilbur's portfolio is a whole range of products and platforms that he's gonna tell you all about. And Mark's career, as usual, and diverse in the true spirit of this conference, spans across media, e-commerce, prop tech, and recently insurance. Please welcome Mark.
Thank you. I was listening to the presentation before the panel, and I'm not sure if it was Linda or Tatiana was talking about that perfect profile, the person who, you know, they do exercise and then their premiums come down, and I was just picturing, I do a bit of trail running, I mountain bike, and I trip over things. So I think my premiums will go up, and then Shira would probably prefer me to be the couch potato. So what I was going to start off with is, the clicker's not working. There we go. Quickly introduce Wilbur, day one of our brand. We are the technology arm of Claim Central. We've been in the market for a long time, but obviously none of you have heard of our brand as yet. We do claims management, Wilbur Claims Manager. We have a repair network, which we used to call Trades Plus, that's Wilbur Repair now, and Wilbur Live, which is remote streaming, the ability to do triage or assessment remotely. Simplifies things and makes the story a hell of a lot easier to talk about. So picture this. Imagine you live somewhere far away, maybe in the Blue Mountains. You commute down into Sydney. There's a storm forecast, but you come to work anyway. And at lunchtime, your neighbor phones you. And your neighbor says to you, you better come home. And you then start the home commute. An hour and a half later, you get home and you discover something like this. And the worst part is, not only is it your favorite ute, but it's not even your house. Now, you've got a couple of insurance claims that you want to deal with, starting with replacing your car. Show of hands, if your preference is going to be to phone the insurer. Not a single person. One, two, couple of people, okay, a few people. Show of hands, if you would prefer to be dealing with a broker. About double the number of people who want to phone. Show of hands, if you want to submit online through an online form. We had a good 50, 60% of the room, I reckon. Chat, online chat. Couple of people, about the same as phone on online chat. Email? No one. It's interesting that. Myself, I don't like call centers. I don't like phoning at all. I would be online. And the reason I want to do it online is because I'm hoping my insurer has all those channels feeding in to one process on the back end, and I'm going to get the same quality of service no matter where the call originated. This is what I picture on the other end of the online of the phone call. And imagine during a CAT, I mean, you'd all know, major catastrophe, huge volume of claims, these people are run off their feet. They're angry before they even answer my call. I'm trying to explain to them that a house landed on my car, and this is a really bad experience for me and for them. And I'm gonna definitely end up being that guy because there's no way that call goes well. So the point of this is, there's a great piece of research. The deck is shared and the links are all gonna be there so you can pick them up. There's a company called T-Tech, or it used to be Teletech. They have a website called Customer Strategist, and they talk about the transformation of your customer experience. The second bullet point they call out, and you're gonna see this everywhere when you start researching this, the second thing they call out is channel flexibility. Wherever your customer is, that's where you wanna meet them. If your customer wants to lodge with any of the things we ran through, it's really easy to capture that and have it feed into the same process and then have one optimized process on the back end for how you're gonna handle things. We've done a whole lot of research, and I'm gonna go into a little bit of that research, but there's a download that you'll be able to grab later where you can get into the detail, and also I'll stick around if you wanna have a chat and ask some questions. I'm gonna call out a few anecdotal examples from talking to customers and asking them questions about their processes and what goes on within their business. These are specific quotes, so I've left them anonymized because they might not be exactly what the customers want to be talking about. The biggest thing is automation. This is a direct quote from a CIO at an insurer in Sydney. And when he says the biggest thing is automation, this is a conversation about legacy systems and how the process as workflows between the various legacy systems is manual, and they're trying to automate around that. Systems need to constrain behavior to manage risk. This conversation was fantastic because the person I was talking to made a point that if you do automation but you don't have a risk mindset up front, you can actually make it easier for risk to flow through your system. You can automate fraud, and then you can only catch it at the end with some kind of forensics. So having a risk mindset as you are implementing this kind of automation and as you're integrating things, building these digital channels, is really important. Legacy systems are holding us back, and we're using RPA as a workaround. We had a reference to RPA earlier, I think I heard as well. So robotic program process automation, sorry, is the ability to effectively replicate a human on a keyboard. And it is a good workaround for legacy systems. If your entire business is running on those kind of band-aids, you've got a problem because it's going to become incrementally harder to manage. But it still works, and it's still an acceptable thing. Sometimes you've got systems that you just can't change. We have, I think, 27 bots running in our business. We use RPA internally. We receive claims from insurers that come through. It's a PDF attached to an email, for example, and we'll have a bot that will capture that PDF and effectively type it into a claim system, that kind of thing. In a digital world, customer expectations are off the charts. This was touched on in the panel as well, actually. If you think of the apps that you use every day, the Facebook maybe that we spoke about before, if you use Gmail, anyone use the Gmail app on their phone? These kind of experiences that you have, in fact, any retail experience, if you buy from Amazon or eBay, I'm sure most of you do, it's seamless. You don't have to stop and think about things. And that is the benchmark that we are being measured against. And for an old industry with a lot of legacy tech, customers don't accept if we tell them, I'm sorry, it's going to take 4 days to do this because it has to go through a lot of systems. They're used to everything being wrapped up and flowing in that way, and that's the benchmark that we have to measure up to. This is actually a customer quote as well. So in summary, the four key areas that we saw standing out were automation. Straight through processing is really, in fact, Tatiana and I spoke about that earlier, but the ability to aim at that claims automation is incredibly important, and it's going to become more and more so because the cost of the human capital that we invest in the process is the single biggest cost for us outside of the actual mitigation work or repair work. Risk management, increasingly important in Australia, and as the legislation changes, it's going to get more so, not less. Systems integration, making things flow and making things flow seamlessly is going to be a big thing. And digitization of process, so that's the ability to interact through digital channels, but also for our staff to be working in digital processes, not having to swap between things and write things on post-it notes to move between systems. There's a piece of research that McKinsey put out on the future of claims. The link will be there. Standout number in that piece of research was 30% of the claims process should be able to be automated. And that's not 30% of claims, it's 30% overall. So some claims will always require a manual step, but a lot of that process can be automated and have human checkpoints where decisions can be reviewed and inspected. The benefit of that 30%, which they call out in that report, three key things. The first one is a 10 to 15 point impact in the positive direction on your net promoter scores. The second one is an efficiency gain, 20 to 30% in reducing the adjustments on claims. So these are the kind of things that happen after a claim's been approved, something has to change. 20 to 30% reduction. And overall efficiency, 4% improvement, and it's to do with accuracy as well. Now, if you think of the net promoter thing in particular, claims is usually the single biggest point of churn. I know I've changed my insurer because I had a roof claim that was not handled well. If you can improve that net promoter score on claims, it's worth the investment just to focus on that alone. This is the report I was referencing before. So we engaged an independent third party to do research on the future of insurance claims and how people see things going in the US and in Australia. The QR code goes, or the URL is really simple now, so you can just grab that. Again, we'll share the deck, and the detail will be provided so you can read it, and I won't run through it all in the session before lunch. But it's quite interesting and it's worth grabbing. So in summary, what we saw there, what are the key findings? The first one is all about the value of the efficiency. It's all about automated communications and making people feel connected to the process. Australian consumers in particular are quite interested in that, and they are quite interested in getting more information about what's going on in the process. A lot of the claims processes that we have where you do get an update, it will just tell you which step of the process it's in, not actual details of what's going on. And the third one was the Americans really like the value of an individual relationship, feeling connected to a human on the other end of the process. The opportunity that you see coming out of those three is, how do you find ways to individualize that experience where you need to, and then do that at scale? And the scale thing is important because that's really where good digital processes and good technology kicks in, is the ability to scale without having to keep adding people. I've called out a couple of the factors that create drag in Australia and in the US. And in Australia, the time and cost of replatforming is an inhibitor. And this is why you'll hear a lot of us, actually it's a question out of interest, who's using RPA or anything like that, workflow automation? Quite a few people. It's a good workaround and it's a good solution to tackling those problems, but the cost of replatforming is exponentially, our labor costs are quite high as a percentage of what, you know, the spend on systems, and so it holds us back and inhibits that as well. The age of our industry, and it means that we do have a lot of legacy as well baked in, and those legacy systems, which, you know, we're running on old policy systems or we're running on old claim systems, making those changes are big projects, and so it does prove to be an inhibitor as well. And then pricing, as kind of ties in with the one above as well, but pricing is a bit of a blocker, and it means that change has to actually be demanded before it happens. In the US, the consumers, as we mentioned before, they want to speak to a person, and that is what they equate with a good customer experience. And there's a consumer mistrust and an industry mistrust of technology. And as a result of that, there's also there's a mistrust of TPAs as well. And so as a result of that, they kind of slow to adopt technology change as well. So how do we see the future? In Australia, the automation thing is a big deal, and it's going to become increasingly so. And the reduced human touch points, and that's about the cost of hiring all those humans. So if we can save the human effort for the edge cases and have the normal claims flow through, that's kind of the nirvana that we're all chasing. Greater integration of the consumer and more transparency. So that's the ability for a consumer to get more detailed information about what's going on and how things are tracking. And then lastly, there's an increased expectation of agility and speed. And that kind of ties into that baseline that digital experiences, retail or consumer direct experiences are creating that we have to measure up to. In the US, it's a little bit different. They're looking at human interactions being reserved for those more complex claims, large loss claims, and those edge cases that just don't flow through a normal rule system. Technology is supporting business operations and not driving or enabling change. People will make change happen and then the technology will follow, as opposed to the other way around. And then seamless workflows, which is really all about how we're doing all those integrations. This is comparing the US and Australia, and I'll just call out over here, if you see this mobile apps gap, so this is the ability to see where things are at and to manage your claims. In Australia, we're offering it to about 15%, whereas in the US they're at more like 35, and we have a similar gap in terms of online portals for actually managing and getting information about where your claims are at. That'll change over time as well. Australia does tend to lag behind the US a bit, so this is kind of expected. I'm gonna move on to a different topic, and I'm gonna show you a case study. This is not a product that we sell, this is something that we use internally. So what happens is, when you think of our business, we get data from different systems across an entire claim, from first notification of loss, right the way through to the claims being resolved, the trades have been sent out, the roof has been repaired in my case, and is the customer happy or not? And we'll go through that whole process. By pulling all that data together, we've created this module that we call a 360 view of a claim. And what that enables us to do is it enables us to see where things are not progressing, and it's easy to alert on things that have stalled, which allows us to meet compliance requirements quicker. And I'll show you two specific examples that are a slightly different view, but it's the same underlying data. What you see over here, if you see the red box on the slide, we've got a claim that came through and went into an administration phase, and it got stuck there for the better part of 2 months. Now, if you're the homeowner, you can imagine the frustration if I've called every week for the last 8 weeks and been told it's stuck in this particular phase. What's going on? And what are you doing to accelerate it? The second one, which is an example that I love, is a $200,000 escape of liquid claim. This is a large loss, it's a serious claim. It was reported on the 29th of January, you can see over there. And over there you can see 24th of April, it was approved by the client. Now, that's a big claim and it's a long time to get progress on it. And if you were the insured party, you would probably be churning at the end of that. This allows us to flag these things and to escalate them. And when you're looking at processes, it's a good thing to bake in. The ability to see where things are starting to slip past those SLAs, never mind for compliance, just to drive the business. I'm going to touch on the value of apps quickly, and this will be my home stretch between, it's all that stands between you and lunch. When you start thinking of building apps and putting an app in the hands of your customers, a couple of things to bear in mind. The first one, there are 2.9 million apps in the Google Play Store right now. There are 4.4 million apps in the iOS store. So there's a lot of apps out there. If you create an app on the day you put it in the store, on average, there's going to be about 1,000 other apps entering the store alongside your app just for iOS. If you're putting out an Android app, there's going to be 3,300 apps on an average day going into the App Store. If you do manage to stand out in that noise, about 25% of apps are never opened a second time. So what that means is they've gone into the App Store, found the app, downloaded it, they've looked at it, and they've left. They never come back, one in four. And the reason that happens is there's no what's in it for me for most of those apps. There's no, it's not actually solving a problem. And it's something you really need to bear in mind. If you want to wrap something in an app in and of itself is not a solution. And there's a beautiful quote that I love from Theodore Levitt, who's a marketing professor at Harvard. He says, people don't want to buy quarter-inch drills. If you go to Bunnings, you're looking for a quarter-inch drill. It's because you need the quarter-inch hole, not because you need the quarter-inch drill. And you need the same mindset when you're building apps. It's a very expensive investment if it's not solving a problem for someone. I'm going to go through a case study, which is about mobile, and I'll talk about where the app does or doesn't play in it as well. So GuideOne is one of our customers in the US. GuideOne use a product of ours that we call Wilbur Live, which we used to call LiveGenic. And the background on GuideOne is they're a commercial insurer. They insure churches, schools, retirement homes, and kind of larger properties. And they're based in West Des Moines, about 600 people in the company, and they've been around since the 1940s. The challenges that they had, and bear in mind this is over the last year, so it was as COVID was hitting the US, long travel times because they insure over quite a big area, very costly loss adjusters because of the nature of who they're working with and the size and the scope of the claims, very complex properties because it's not just houses, they're always commercial properties, multi-story, big claims, and also COVID risk, which was a huge deal. What they were aiming at solving through this proof of concept was they wanted to reduce their inspection costs. They wanted to increase the capacity per loss adjuster who was on their staff. Also, they were outsourcing to third parties, and they wanted to try and cut that outsourcing cost. And another key driver was to shorten that claim cycle time. So as I started looking at LiveGenic, there are two products that go into the field. The first one is what we call the customer portal, and that's what you see on the left there. So this is, if an insurer receives a claim, as the claim gets acknowledged, they can reply with an SMS to the customer, and the customer clicks on a link. This is in the web view. It's in a browser. It's not an app. There is an app as well. Where the app actually gets downloaded and used is if you picture an area where the hurricane has gone through and it's taken out the cellular towers, or there's major flooding, or there's bushfires, and the cell towers are down. So people can download an app on Wi-Fi from wherever they happen to be connected, go to the area where we need to report damage from, capture offline, and then go back onto Wi-Fi and upload. And that's where the use case for an app really stacks up. Most people who use this product actually use the web version, the consumer, I should say. On the other hand, we've got the enterprise app, and this is where a loss adjuster in the field is fed the jobs they need to do. And what they do is all their jobs get queued, as you can see there, and then the experience is very similar to the web. Now, what they get out of this is they capture data in the field, it's stored in the cloud, it's stored for 10 years, it's compliant, it's GDPR compliant, and all the other things that need to be done. And then it integrates with the claim system and just passes through the content so it's linked into the claims. The net result of, on average, what we see is a 45 to 65% improvement in processing, in the cost. We're speeding up by about 3.5 times because of the ability to handle that much more per person and the SMS versus travel time. And about an 80% or more than 80% reduction in fraud related to people misreporting, because the data, the phone is actually geotagging. You know if they're reporting from someone else's property and so on. And also they're capturing documents and digitally signing like DocuSign. So that's when it makes a lot more sense, because the phone, the device itself, is anchoring trust. So that's what's in it for the insurer. Overall in the workflow detail, and I'll fly through this because I think I'm pressed for time. First notification of loss happens, SMS link gets sent. What happens is it takes about 10 seconds from that link being received on average for the customers to actually capture data. So the loss adjustment can effectively start within 10 seconds of the claim being, the save button being clicked. The virtual inspection process plays through. Live video is captured. That is stored in the cloud, as I said, so they can then replay and capture stills when you want to create an assessment report. And there can also be a script. So if it goes offline, you can give a person the steps of what they need to capture. And then they can also upload documents, proof of purchase, registration for a car, and so on. And then the assessment can be finalized. And that whole process can play out really, really quickly. In fact, as a result, we saw 82% of claims that were reported, people used the capture was actually successful. And 28% of those claims were completed with no loss adjuster sent out at all. So they were completed with desktop assessment. 22% of all claims had the data, the virtual inspection done within an hour. And we also had 62% of those done within 24 hours, which is huge. So average cycle time was down to 1.76 days. 6 hours or less than one working day was the median cycle time. So that's cutting out the outliers. And the net results of what we saw for Guard One, an implicit saving when you factor in the headcount costs, the cost of delays and claims handling and so on, 229,000 or 760% benefit, return on investment compared to what the technology actually cost them. That's a pretty compelling argument for an app. And that's me, that's my presentation with 2 minutes to spare. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. There was one stat in your presentation from McKinsey I'd strongly disagree with, only 30%
only.
Automatable, only
30.
double that. I'd open the floor for one question to the audience.
No questions. I was either really good or really bad.
I think I'd, yeah, please.
I guess, Mark, you were talking about the 360 platform and then, you know, using all of the information from all of those other providers in relation to putting it together and then obviously getting the insights from combining all of that information. Obviously, what you've had to do is you've had to go to those other providers and get data dumps. You've had to get that information from those other providers, either on a granular level or, you know, in terms of an overall data dump in terms of an Excel sheet or whatever. So I just wanted to say, because, you know, that's obviously, in terms of claims tech, you know, that's a massive thing that a lot of people these days are struggling with.
Yeah.
Is in terms of the practicalities. You know, there was a presentation on a panel discussion around, you know, efficiencies in claims management. And effectively, efficiencies in claims management will come automatically once we figure out
get
this.
The data.
How do I get your data? How do you get my data? And not have to pay a fortune for it, you know. So can you talk around, you know, the actual practicalities of how you do that?
We have what I would call a competitive advantage, and that is that we own the businesses through that entire life cycle. So even if we're farming work out to a trades panel to do repairs, they are working on our platform. So their comments are being captured through a platform that we run. So that is really, that is probably the key thing, is the fact that we're in this relatively unique position where we have the entire thing. So from first notification of loss, which is running on Wilbur Claims, right the way through to property management, Wilbur Property, where we might be sending trades out, the whole way through to the end. And so that's where we get this from. When we sell technology, we give people a feed of data. If you are buying technology, if you're signing a contract renewal, I would stipulate that access to your data is a key before you move forward on anything. Because exactly to your point, data is what's gonna help you make those decisions. If you're trying to guess, you're flying in the dark. And so it's critically important that you get that data coming in. Setting up data warehouses is, it can be expensive, but there's also really good ways. There's a lot of good technology out there now where you can do things quite cheap or relatively cheap and just start small and build it up. So yeah, absolutely. That is like the goal, is get that data from all the sources where you interact. Anyone who you give work to, that data is related to the work and it should belong to you.
Thank you, Mark. It was very dense presentation in terms of facts and stats. So please, if you get access to the slides, go read the report, think about it. Thank you, Mark. I will not stand between you and the lunch any longer. Please don't forget to fill out the feedback forms and talk to the sponsors and enter the prize competition later in the afternoon. We'll be back here at 1 o'clock.